Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Mr. Richard Gage, who's a San Francisco Bay architect. He's a member of the American Association of Architects, and he's the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Richard, thank you so very much for being with us this afternoon.
It's great to be here, Stan. Thanks for having me.
Today. Well, it's good to have you here. And, of course, we're looking forward to meeting you this weekend there at the Conspiracy Conference in San Francisco, where Richard is going to be giving one of the keynote addresses.
Yes, finally we get to meet you, too. I'll be honored to meet you.
Well, thank you so very much. But for our listeners out there, Richard, why don't you tell them how you got involved in this? Like so many people, you probably saw those buildings come down, and did you initially, when you saw them come down, realize that we were not being told the truth?
No. I was just in shock, I think, like most other Americans. And I think something registered as being not right, but what did I know? I'd never seen, and no other architect or nobody else probably has seen buildings come down like this, and we were under attack. We didn't know when the next plane was going to hit. We're all in shock. We suspended our rational judgment, and the 8 years since really has given most people enough time to step out from the trance, really, that we were put in by this horrible set of circumstances, and 3 years ago, I was listening to the radio and heard David Ray Griffin describing the witnesses that had heard sounds of explosions and seen flashes of light at the onset of destruction of these collapses, and it got me thinking. Well, wait a minute. Yeah, let's. What else is he saying? You know. So as he went through the evidence for this alternative theory of the collapses of these buildings, I began to think to myself, you know, this actually makes sense. I researched it and heard him that the next night in March of 2006 talk to 600 people, a sold-out crowd in Oakland at the Grand Lake Theater, and I was just in shock. All of the evidence seemed to add up to support the theory of explosive controlled demolition for not only the Twin Towers, but Building 7. So I started Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth at that time, and we now have over 680 almost architects and engineers demanding a real investigation of these collapses.
And I think it's so very difficult. I know for a couple of years after the collapse of the buildings, I did not want to believe that we had not been told the truth. Certainly, there seemed to be ample evidence that the Muslim terrorists were there, and they probably were on the planes, and although some of them apparently are still alive in the Middle East, but everything would point to the fact that the government had been tracking these Muslims and just hadn't tried to stop them. But then when I watched Building 7 come down on video, and I watched it over and over again, and I saw how the center of the building collapsed first, and then the base of the building collapsed. Well, that is characteristic of controlled demolition. And really, I think it probably, and even as suspicious as I am of the motives of people working behind the scenes, I finally had to admit that if Building 7 was a controlled demolition, then maybe we hadn't been told the truth about what happened to the Twin Towers. Well, now you can begin to watch this and you hear Richard discuss what happened, you begin to realize that we have been sold a bill of goods, and there really were literally hundreds of firemen, or well over 100 firemen who were there, who heard the explosions, but you've never heard their stories. I wonder why. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Richard Gage, and he's a San Francisco Bay architect, and he's a member of the American Institute of Architects, and he's the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and we're really pleased to have with him today. Now, he is going to be speaking at the Conspiracy Conference. It's going to be held at the Marriott and the Great American Parkway in Santa Clara, and he's going to be speaking this weekend. I am going to be there as well, and there are going to be people from all aspects of those people who believe that there is a conspiracy out there. I believe that there are forces out there that, of course, have an agenda, and, of course, we're not here to talk about who they are. I think Richard simply wants to address the point that we have not been told the truth about what happened. And really, it was a number of years. It wasn't until 2006 that Richard, who was an architect, happened to hear David Ray Griffith talk. And David Ray Griffith has written a number of books about what's took place. Actually, he's a theologian of all things, retired theologian, professor of theology. And when Richard heard David Ray Griffin talk and then went to a meeting that was held in Oakland, he began to analyze what's taken place, and now they have almost, how many architects? 680?
Yeah, about that many. All demanding a new investigation, and many of them because they had not heard or seen the third worst structural failure in modern history. You alluded to this building, building number 7, a 47-story skyscraper about a football field in length away from the North Tower. Well, the story of this is fascinating. This building doesn't collapse until 5:20 in the afternoon of 9/11, well after the two twin towers came down. The North Tower ejected material up to 600 feet away from it, many, many, many core perimeter columns mostly, that ejected that far. Some of them started fires, curiously enough, in the World Trade Center 7, maybe about 10 fires, and they're not very large fires either. So the official story tells us that these fires caused the collapse, for the first time in history, of a high-rise, steel-framed, fireproofed office building. And the problem, and so they had to come up with an elaborate theory called a new phenomena of thermal expansion causing the internal cascading failure of Building 7 and then its overall global collapse. Well,
hold that thought for just a moment, Richard. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and basically we're talking about the coming down of Building 7, and Richard was just saying that there were some fires in Building 7, but lots of steel-reinforced buildings have had fires in them. None of them, not in all history, have ever collapsed, but on that day, 3 collapsed, and of course Building 7 didn't come down until 5:20 in the evening. It wasn't hit by suddenly an airplane at all. We don't know what caused the fires in the building. But none of them were very bad fires, and you pick up the story there, Richard, about Building number 7 and the amazing collapse of Building 7.
Well, we're told that many of the fires were started by these beams. The problem is that these beams ejected out of the World Trade Center towers were the ends of them were dripping with molten metal. Several tons of molten metal, in fact, is seen by the first responders and cleanup workers underneath all 3 buildings, the Twin Towers and Building 7. This is a huge problem. I'll come back to this molten metal, describe why it's important. But first, the physical characteristics of the collapse of Building 7 directly relate to controlled explosive demolition. We have a symmetrical collapse at free fall speed in the first 100 feet of this drop of this building in the exact manner of a controlled demolition, a classic kink in the middle of this building, and it falls within its own footprint. It's an implosion. Free fall speed means the columns had to have been removed and removed forcibly. That can only be done by explosives. The evidence of those explosives is in all of this molten metal seen by the first responders. This is an unusual controlled demolition. The molten metal has in it the signature, chemical signature of thermite, an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. So, including aluminum, iron, fluorine, manganese, sulfur, other compounds, silica, that are not supposed to be, that are not found in normal office fires at all. Neither of which is hot corrosion attack on the steel, which FEMA documented very carefully in their Appendix C of their BPAT report, Building Performance Assessment Team report, that came out in May of 2002. They clearly document intergranular melting, rapid oxidation, sulfidation, evaporation of steel. This does not happen by office fires. So we have the chemical evidence of thermite, this incendiary, which does cause these things. And in fact, there is more evidence of thermite, not only in the molten metal, in the slag and the ends of the beams, but also in all of the dust, ubiquitous throughout lower Manhattan. This dust, which is pulverized concrete to a talcum powder consistency, which is extremely disturbing in and of itself. But in all of this dust, there are billions of iron-rich microspheres, smaller than a human hair, most of them. And they're documented not only by Stephen Jones, a professor formerly of Brigham Young University, a physics professor. He finds in these spheres the chemical evidence, once again, of thermite, aluminum, iron, oxygen, sulfur, manganese, fluorine. 1,3-diphenylpropane is also found. This is a molecule associated with very high-tech thermites called Sol-Gel thermites. They can be sprayed on to beams and so forth. In fact, he finds also in the dust these chips, 16th of an inch long, some of them, most of them smaller, of unignited thermite, a very high-tech form of thermite called nanothermite, because these the iron and aluminum particles are so small, 1,000 times smaller than a human hair. They are... this stuff is only made in highly sophisticated Defense Department laboratories. We're not talking about something that's made, for instance, in a cave in Afghanistan.
Well, I think the important thing is that certainly the debris there at the World Trade Center, no one was allowed to inspect it. I mean, no one could go in. You know, they had it carefully guarded. They immediately cleaned it up as best they could, and they carted it off to be melted down in China so that no one could inspect it. But they couldn't control all of the dust. You remember those wonderful pictures we saw the day of the attack and these billowing clouds of dust? Well, a lot of this dust settled on adjacent buildings. And, of course, nobody was allowed to take anything out of the World Trade Center. But there were people who actually collected some of that dust, and some of it then was sent to Dr. Stephen Jones, who, of course, when he questioned what had happened, why tremendous pressure was put on at Brigham Young University, where he was a physics professor, and he was forced to resign. But he's been working on this ever since and analyzing this dust, and it's not just Dr. Jones. Richard, my understanding is that a number of scientists have analyzed this dust and found evidence of thermite or thermate there, this nanothermate, which of course is a highly incendiary and would have not only melted the beams, but would have created those pools of molten metal that were in the basement there for many days, if not several weeks, after the 9/11 attack. Is that true?
Yeah. And the problem was that they were creating a lake trying to put out all of these fires, which were persisting as a result of all of this molten iron. Well, thermite contains its own source of oxygen. Potassium permanganate is the oxidizer that's found in the chemical constituency. It burns just as well underwater. So there's reasons for these persistent fires fed by this molten iron, as it turns out. It's not melted steel. It's very important because molten iron is, while a component of structural steel, it occurs without the alloys of steel in it. In other words, molten iron is not a separate component of these buildings. It is a new addition in the rubble that is created, that is, in fact, the byproduct of thermite. That's its only way of being there, if you will. And it has in it the chemical proof signature of thermite. This is a smoking gun. This is very well documented in peer-reviewed papers by Stephen Jones and other scientists. In fact, the 25-page peer-reviewed paper documenting the unignited chips of nanothermite is also now peer-reviewed for the last month on the Open Bentham Chemical Physics Journal. And that's creating quite a controversy in scientific communities right now.
But of course, we're not hearing about this through the regular media. This is totally being blocked out. But you actually had an interesting interview on a major television station. I saw this up on YouTube. What sort of response did you get from that, and where was that?
Well, Fresno KMPH Fox TV interviewed us the morning after our talk in Fresno. We've just completed a 5-city tour of Southern California. Started in Fresno, and they did come and film us at the presentation, and we came into the studio the next day and filmed the Great Day show there. And it has now been seen by over 100,000 viewers on YouTube. So your listeners can Google Richard Gage, G-A-G-E, and Fox TV, and watch this. It's rather well put together interview in 7.5 minutes. I've given out as much of this information as I can under the conditions there, and it's being very well received, and it's something that your viewers can send to every architect and engineer that they can find and everybody else that they know in order to get the word out, because we're getting no help from mainstream media. We're only getting help from incredible alternative media like yours, show, Stan, and the courageous people who are willing to take a stand for truth, like yourself and other patriots around the country. And people are spreading this word by this truth, this evidence, really. Science-based forensic evidence found at the crime scene is what we focus on at AE911truth.org. And which is where people can also see that KMPH.
And that's really very good. And if you certainly go to Richard's website to see it. Actually, we posted it on our website as well. But if you have a search engine, you just put in a YouTube and then Richard Gage and then Fox News, and you watch it. And actually, I thought that the hosts, they were somewhat skeptical, but they certainly gave you an opportunity to get out the truth. And when it was all over, you could see that I think thought that you'd pretty well won them around to your position.
The evidence speaks for itself, and this happens everywhere we go. We just gave 5 presentations in 5 cities, and we do a show of hands. We might have in a crowd of 100 or 200 anywhere from 6 to 12 or more people who believe the official story, and then 2 to 3 times that many who are unsure, and the rest controlled demolition believers. We draw a lot of those. But the interesting thing is, of those who doubted us in the beginning or were unsure, almost all of them, by the end of the presentation, agree with us, and many of them sign our petition, especially architects and engineers who know intuitively that the symmetrical freefall collapse of Building 7 is obviously a controlled demolition. They're extremely disturbed. We're going to conventions. We just finished the AIA convention, gave out hundreds of DVDs, and signed up 60 architects during that weekend a month ago to demand a new investigation.
Well, one of the things that I've watched the Twin Towers come down time and again, and I knew something was wrong. And if you watch the building on top, above the level, of course, where the plane hit, you begin to see this almost decompose, as the rest of the building is coming down. And of course, that wouldn't have that tremendous pressure on it. I'm going to let you talk about some of the things that you found out, and I'm sure you know far more about this than I do, but I said, look at that, and you have a feeling something's wrong. I'm not sure what it is, but I know it's not what we've been told. We'll be back here in just a moment with Mr. Richard Gage, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Richard, certainly, I'm sure you've analyzed that coming down. It almost looks like the upper superstructure of the building is beginning to disintegrate as the building is collapsing.
It's quite disturbing. This is one of the first things I show people with the Twin Towers after showing them or reading to them the over 100 first responders and iron workers who heard sounds of explosions and saw flashes of light at the onset of these collapses. The next thing that we talk about is the destruction of the upper block in the North Tower. This is a 15-story section of the building that, above the jet plane impacts, that's supposed to have driven the rest of the building down to the ground. We're told it's a gravitational collapse. Problem is, it's destroyed itself in the first 4 seconds. After that, there's nothing driving the rest of the building down in any of the videos or photographs. It's tearing itself apart at free fall speed, almost two-thirds of free fall speed, continuous acceleration down through the path of what was the greatest resistance, the 80,000 tons of structural steel in this building. It's concrete. 90,000 tons of concrete is being pulverized into this fine powder in midair. 4- and 20-ton perimeter wall units are ejected 600 feet laterally at 50 to 70 miles per hour. And there are explosions going off 20, 40, and even 60 stories below the ensuing collapse. And they occur at 200 feet per second, most of them. These are propelled by explosives, not by air being pushed out from this collapsing building. So these are among the problems. In addition to the fact that there's no floors found at the base of either tower, we had 110 floors, each an acre in size. Guess what? Not 50 of them, not 10 of them, not even one is found at the bottom of either pile. In fact, there's only a two-story pile of debris, core columns, perimeter columns, and aluminum cladding found at the bottom of either of these towers. This is hugely problematic for a gravitational collapse theory.
And, you know, one of the things that there was actually, I think, three firemen who survived that. I don't think they were on floor 20 or something like that, and a couple of them were out in the hallway with they just stopped there to help a woman. And the building came down all around them, on top of them and underneath them, and yet they survived. Have you ever looked into that at all?
Well, there's 1,151 people who were vaporized in this collapse. We don't even have small enough samples to get any DNA from them. There were 6,000 pieces of bodies that were small enough to get DNA from, but not from those 1,100 people. 300 people were found whole, but the rest were in these incredibly small pieces. In fact, 700 bone fragments were found across the street on top of the Deutsche Bank building. How in the world did the bone fragments get to be a half an inch long? This is extremely disturbing, again, to the official story.
And, of course, you know, I think there are a lot of the families of the people who died there. They're very upset about what's happened. Most of them took the money, though. They were given large sums of money, and they promised never to bring a lawsuit. But there are a few of them out there who would not accept the money or trying to get the lawsuit. And, of course, you're not hearing much about those cases. Everything has to be done to conceal the truth. From the American people, we'll be right back with Richard Gage here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Richard is simply talking about the fact that most people don't understand that there were over 1,100 human beings, people, Americans, in those buildings, whose bodies were vaporized. Now, how, if this was truly simply a pancake collapse starting at the top, and as the building collapsed and one floor simply collapsed on the next one, how would you vaporize the bodies? You would crush the bodies, no question, but you wouldn't vaporize them. And yet there are over 1,100 bodies. They've never found any evidence of it all. In fact, as Richard was saying, they've never found evidence of most of the floors. These cement floors, they all vaporized. How would that happen in a pancake collapse, Richard? It doesn't make any sense.
We would expect the bodies to be trapped between these floors and found somewhere at the bottom, certainly mangled. We'd expect an acre of flooring and concrete to be broken up, but not disappeared. I mean, the floor pans that the concrete is poured on, there's 220 acres of those steel decking floor pans. Not one of them are found at the base of either tower. In fact, what we find in the dust is metal filings. Somehow the concrete being pulverized to a fine powder and the metal decking pulverized to metal filings found ubiquitous throughout all of the dust is extremely problematic and actually difficult to explain in any scenario, but most of all with gravitational collapse. It makes no sense whatsoever. In fact, all of the evidence mounts up to not support the official fire-induced collapse and jet plane-induced damage theory. It does all support the theory of explosive controlled demolition, especially with the evidence found in the iron spheres in the dust and the molten iron, the slag on the ends of the steel beams. It is all quite problematic. In fact, we even have foreknowledge of the collapse of Building 7. We have the BBC announcing the collapse of this building 20 minutes before it happened. Never before in history had we had a high-rise steel frame building collapse due to fire, and yet the BBC is announcing it, and they apologize for this grievous error, citing the confusing events of the day. But does that make them psychic? No, it appears as if there's some sort of script. In fact, CNN announced the collapse of a 50-story building at 10:45 in the morning. Now, this is about an hour after the collapse of the Twin Towers, so we have huge problems there as well. Had the Building 7 come down at that time in the morning, we might not have even known about its curious symmetrical freefall collapse, because it would have been shrouded by all of the dust and debris from the World Trade Center Twin Towers. Obviously, the question is, was it supposed to have come down at 10:45? We discussed all of this evidence with video and photographs in our presentation, which is on our DVD, which I think you have on your radio website. Isn't that right, Stan?
We do actually carry your DVD. We think it's a very important source of information. Somebody has just called in and wanted to know who makes thermite. Where could large amounts of that could be made? And there could be certainly some way to determine where it was made, where it was purchased. And incidentally, if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But certainly, as far as, do we have any idea? Now, could you differentiate perhaps thermite and thermate? And then, of course, this fact that this was nanothermite, which is certainly a very unusual product, not something you could buy down at the local explosive store.
Right. It can get very confusing. First of all, thermite has been used for 100 years. They use it to connect railways, and it's simply a component of, in its most simplistic form, two-thirds iron oxide, which is basically rust, and one-third aluminum powders. So you mix those finely, and you get thermite. And if you add sulfur, you get thermate, which lowers the melting point of steel, which is what FEMA has documented in their Appendix C, interestingly enough, which NIST threw out. They completely threw out FEMA's Appendix C off the record when they took over the investigation. This is really highly illegal and unethical treatment of evidence, but we don't have it in the official record today. And then when we get to nanothermite, extremely small particles, a thousandth the size of a human hair, that is really high-tech stuff made only in sophisticated Defense Department laboratories.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
God bless America.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest, of course, is Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. We're talking about this thermite and thermate, and of course, the thermate can simply literally lower the temperature at which steel melts. Now, I have actually heard, and I've seen some pictures, that some of the ends of some of the beams that were down there in the pile, this big stack of steel there, seemed to be almost like they were cut off at an angle. Have you, in your analysis, found out that, was there any truth to that?
Well, yeah, there are very curious cut-angled core columns at the base of the building after it collapsed. We have now removed those from our DVD and our presentation because we also are aware that some of the iron workers were cutting some of the perimeter columns at angles, and we got into a bunch of arguments with people. And so we've eliminated some of the controversial evidence like this, and because we have so much evidence that's solid, that's unarguable, really. Those photos, particularly one famous one with the fireman and his standing in front of this core column with slag hanging off of this angled cut, is obviously a thermite type application.
Well, you know, Chris, the interesting thing is that for several years, why the testimony of the firemen who were actually there was suppressed. In other words, it wasn't until just a couple of years ago that recorded testimony of the firemen taken immediately after the incident was released. And here you're then, over 100 of them had actually heard and seen the explosion. So how did they suppress that? How did we get that released?
Well, the New York Times was suing the city for the release of this information. 500 first responders were recorded by the city's Fire Commissioner Thomas von Essen within a month after 9/11. They were all recorded, and the city wouldn't release it. Why? Well, we found out after the New York Court State of Appeals forced them to release it that we have over 100 of them talking about sounds of explosions and flashes of light.
Let me just interrupt you there. We brought all of our stations back on board. And Richard was saying that immediately after the attack on the World Trade Center, they actually recorded interviews with the firemen who were there to get their, what they saw, what they knew, because, of course, you don't want to do this a month later. You don't have the actual people begin to change their views. But these were recorded immediately after the attack, and these were all recorded, some 500 firemen. But then this information was sealed. And so eventually the New York Times brought a suit against the city and got the testimony, verbal testimony of the firemen as to what they saw released. And well over 100 of them had heard the explosions and seen the evidence of the explosions of the building. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. And they you can see all of these quotes, by the way, on journalof911studies.com, an excellent source for technical information like this and many much more. We also have it on our website, and the PowerPoint presentation can be stepped through, and this particular section is in the explosions section, and I encourage everybody to take a look at it. As well, what the firemen are saying is that they heard like bands of explosions wrapping all the way around, pop, 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 they describe it, like a controlled demolition, they even say. Many of them saw flashes of light at the middle floors and at the upper floors going all the way around the building. And again and again and again, they say the same kinds of things. And we're not talking about, you know, floors collapsing on top of each other. It sounds very, very, very different than that.
And, of course, in fact, I just got a letter just today. I was reading from one of our supporters who was a little upset because I don't say the buildings were possibly brought down by a controlled demolition. I should say that rather than they were brought down by controlled demolition. But here were hundreds of firemen that actually had heard and seen evidence of controlled demolition, and that information was intentionally suppressed. When was that finally released?
August of 2005. We didn't know this information until then. There's a lot of new information, including the nanothermite information that has only come out in the last year by Dr. Jones and other scientists, now corroborated in peer-reviewed papers. Additional information, like all of the evidence for molten metal has been accumulated since then. There is much new information to share with news media sources and congressmen and many others, architects, engineers across the country. People are just shocked to see this. Building 7 hadn't even been shown on the media after 9/11 and is only rarely now shown on mainstream media, which is one of the reasons we're very excited about this 7.5-minute interview on Fresno Fox TV.
And, of course, you do have those pictures up on your website of Building 7 coming down, don't you?
Yeah, we sure do. AE911truth.org is the name of the website.
AE911truth.org. Now, let's talk a little bit about the dust. How were the dust specimens collected? We know that the government did everything they could to keep anybody from getting any specimens or anything out of the pile, that is, the debris there. They did everything they could to prevent people from taking anything out that, well, for whatever reason, they didn't want anybody collecting any souvenirs. So how did the people get the dust that has been analyzed and found to contain evidence of thermite and thermate?
Well, fortunately, this dust went everywhere, completely blanketing lower Manhattan and traveling across the river. So many people have samples of this dust. Half a dozen or a dozen of them have been sent to scientists for independent verification of the thermite evidence in the molten iron spheres and in the small chips of unignited thermite, nanothermite, found. But specifically, we have a gentleman who collected a bunch of it on the Brooklyn Bridge only 10 minutes after the collapses of the Twin Towers. And so we're told by some that, oh, those spheres in there, they came from the welding equipment, the iron cutters, iron workers cutting steel at the site, but that can't be, because not only are they found 10 minutes later on the Brooklyn Bridge, but the samples are taken at the tops of skyscrapers across the street from the Twin Towers, so iron workers are not getting stuff up there. It completely filled the apartment of Jeanette McKinley on Liberty Street across the street from the South Tower. This is direct proof that this is untouched samples, uncontaminated, if you will.
Well, because the real tragedy is the public is not getting the truth. In other words, when the verbal testimony of these 500 firemen was released in 2005, it really didn't get covered by the general media. When Dr. Stephen Jones announced, and going along with the other scientists who've actually analyzed the dust specimens and written peer-reviewed articles, and they've been published, the media doesn't seem to want to get this information out. You would think that they would be excited at the prospect. Here's a wonderful story. It suggests that there's been a cover-up, and yet, of course, the media, almost like a gentleman's agreement, is keeping the information from the American people.
Yeah, it's amazing that we don't. It's as if it's a story of the century, after all. I mean, who wouldn't want to break this story? But 90% of the mainstream media is controlled by about four corporations. The question is, who sits on those corporations? Turns out to be the same people that sit on the boards of the corporations of the oil industry, the banking industry, the insurance industry, and the defense industry. All these industries profited enormously from the events of and following 9/11. So they tend to move together in protecting their own interests, and it doesn't include your or my interests, that's for sure.
All right, fine. Well, we've got Mark on the line, and Mark is calling from San Jose. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Pretty good, Doc. You know, I just swung on by fire station number 9 here in San Jose and told the guys to tune in to KKMC 880. And I'm interested in getting a copy of this from the computer. I'm just learning how to use the computer, but I want this broadcast, and I want to listen to it again.
Well, you can go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and you can go to our, go down to where it says listen online, and then it'll be posted there tomorrow, and you're welcome. It'll be an MP3 format. It'll be archived, and you can record it from there. And then, of course, if I could suggest, actually, Richard Gages has a great DVD. We carry it, or you can get it from his website. And once again, do you want to give that website?
Yes, it's AE911Truth. .org stands for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Right, and or you can always order a copy of the program directly from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. Mark, this is so vitally important. The public must understand we have not been told the truth, and think of the implications. You know, if it turned out that Osama bin Laden did not bring that building down, because I don't know how he would have gotten thermite and thermate into that building.
Good point. Was that A like the first letter, E like the fifth letter, 911truth.org?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, good. Anything else?
Well, if I had $1 billion, I'd send it to you.
All right, God bless. Thanks very much.
And that's an important point, Stan. We are a nonprofit organization. I have had to let go of my job as an architect, and I'm earning half the salary from our corporation, and we're only sponsored by generous donors, and so we are asking for assistance. People can become sustaining members of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth for as little as $10 a month. I encourage your listeners to help us as well.
And I certainly do as well. I mean, we have to back the people who are on the front lines of this battle. And Richard has made a tremendous sacrifice to do what he's doing. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Mike, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, a question on the nanothermate.
Is it nanothermate or nanothermite?
Great question. Dr. Jones is calling it nanothermite because not all of it has the evidence of sulfur in it.
Okay. Now, what is it mainly used for?
Well, it's a new material in the last 10 years, first of all, so we don't know. It's highly secretive, made only in Defense Department laboratories, extremely sophisticated ones. This may be the first application that we have any evidence for. That's not completely true. It is also used for the explosive breaking apart of the bolts that hold rockets together as one rocket booster is let go. Those explosive bolts apparently are also nanothermite ignited.
Wow. And do any other countries produce it, or is it mainly United States?
I'm not sure. I would encourage you to take a look at this 25-page peer-reviewed paper, which you can find a reference to on journalof911studies.com. And I think there's a way there to ask questions at that particular website of its authors.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay, fine. Thanks. That was Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Let's go to Herman calling from Carmel. Once again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I'll go right ahead, Herman.
Someone asked where on earth Osama bin Laden or his cohorts could get something like the thermite to put into these buildings. It couldn't possibly have anything to do with the fact that the bin Laden family, very wealthy in Saudi Arabia, were closely connected to George Bush and the other leaders in this country, could it?
Well, it's unlikely that such a high-tech operation would be entrusted to anybody associated with Al-Qaeda, even though they may be part of the CIA. Most people believe that we're talking about more closely held agents. And probably people who've researched this, and I haven't, we stick with the science-based forensic evidence, but some have suggested that this really is, that the fingers seem to point to Defense Department contractors.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Herman?
How are foreigners taking this news? Because they must look at America and wonder what on earth is going on. After all, we are the beacon of truth in the world. I'll take my answer off here.
All right, fine. Of course, Herman is just saying, what happens when this information gets out to other countries? What is the response of foreigners to information that you have, Richard? Have you heard any of their discussions on this?
You know, I have been asked to speak throughout Canada and Europe, and I have. We have larger numbers of people by a little bit showing up at our events in Europe and Canada. I guess the media is less controlled, although it is still highly controlled. It's very disturbing. The people, on the other hand, are very aware of the manipulations of the American people by our press, by our government. They seem to be much more aware of these things, and yet it's still a handful of people who are organizing the events that bring AE 911 Truth to the local cities. So I can't sit here and say, oh, they're completely liberated in Europe. They know all about this. You know, it's still a lot of work for us in the 911 Truth movement internationally. We have been invited to speak in Australia and New Zealand and Japan in November and December, and we will be going, and we're told, in fact, that we expect 500 people in Tokyo, 500 in Kyoto. Those are larger crowds than we have seen most of the time here in the United States. We'll be introduced by the leading parliament member of the opposition party, Senator Fujita. We call him Senators. Parliamentarians, I think they're called there, who are very excited. He's been speaking all around the world, for 9/11 Truth. He has directly challenged his own government, giving evidence for the explosive demolition of these three buildings, because Japan has lost 17 people there. So my guess is Japan is well ahead of the rest of the world in 9/11 awareness, perhaps because of the work of this brave patriot.
Well, I think it's vitally important that people look objectively at what happened, and I will tell you that I sympathize with the people who do not want to accept this story, because I didn't want to accept this story. And looking back on it, you know, as you mentioned, we were all traumatized by what happened. I will never forget Tom Brokaw there, and of course, in the background behind him, you saw the billowing of dust clouds, you know, consuming New York, the black smoke rising. It was just a momentous incident for all of us, and had a tremendous emotional impact. But then to think that we had not been told the truth, and this was brought down by other than simply the planes colliding with the buildings and the subsequent fires and the pancaking. And certainly I spent a great deal of time studying this background of the various Muslims who were involved, and the fact that the government knew all about them, was tracking their activities, and that seemed like a logical explanation for a time. And then finally you come to that realization, especially after seeing Building 7 coming down and watching it not once but a number of times, again and again, until finally, why, of course, you have to actually accept the fact this is a controlled demolition. I mean, I think that really impressed me most was the collapse of the center of the roof of Building 7, and then the base of the building goes. I mean, that is the most incredible thing, exactly as we saw time and again happen certainly in Las Vegas, when they were taking down some of the large casinos there to build larger casinos.
And there are many witnesses who heard sounds of explosions at the base of that building. Whistleblower Craig Bartner from New York Police Department says, "I think I know an explosion when I hear it." Kevin McFadden says, "It's like you wanted to grab onto something. That's how loud it was, rumbling. You felt that in his body, an explosion." And others heard explosions. And described it as the sound of a clap of thunder, a shockwave ripping through the building, and then the building coming down.
Well, did any of these people testify before the 9/11 Commission?
I don't know, actually. But there are many people who did who talked about explosions, but none of those explosions are a part of the official story. We have dozens and dozens and dozens of witnesses of explosions, and none of them, including media professionals and others, first responders and others, none of them, including Willie Rodriguez, none of them have made
hold that thought.
To the 9/11 Commission report.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is Richard Gates, and certainly he's talking about what happened that day, and simply pointing out that despite the fact that many people who witnessed what happened on September 11 testified before the 9/11 Commission report, amazingly enough, their information was not included in the final commission report. They were not allowed to testify publicly. They could only testify in secret. And then their testimony was sealed for 50 years. Why? Well, they said, it has to do with privacy. And, well, if they're not trying to cover something up, I mean, the question is, why would they seal the testimony of these people who heard the explosions for 50 years? And quite obviously, they hope, of course, that most of us will be dead in 50 years and that they can conceal the truth from the American people for that period of time. Is that sort of your take on it?
I don't have a theory about that. The 700 architects and engineers for 9/11 truth, demanding a real investigation, or technical and building professionals. We're not conspiracy theorists, but obviously the implications of these controlled demolitions and the sealing of these records are very dark for America. And we encourage everybody to look at some of the research done by some exceptional scholars such as David Ray Griffin, who have written, he's written 8 books now, on these subjects, and they're very helpful in understanding the broader context beyond just the buildings. For instance, the hijackers, of which you've noted 6 of them appear to be still alive, were interviewed by the London Guardian, BBC. The put options where millions were made on the faded airliners, betting that United Airlines and American Airlines would go down in value the very next day. 9/11 Commission report says, we didn't follow this through because to pass the Deutsche Bank building, Deutsche Bank officers, because obviously Al-Qaeda wasn't involved in these put options. But the NORAD had drills that took our jet fighters every direction away from Washington and the Pentagon. And the Pentagon, speaking of which, most people believe a plane never hit the Pentagon. Who actually have looked at the evidence, but it's very controversial in the 9/11 truth movement, and we don't talk about it because of that controversy, and it just takes too much time. But the Pentagon could release the dozens of videos that they do have that show clearly what did or didn't hit the Pentagon.
Hold that thought, Richard. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess this is Richard Gates from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and Richard will be speaking at the Conspiracy Conference this weekend. That is the 6th and 7th of June at the Marriott Hotel in Santa Clara. If you're interested in going, why, of course, you can actually sign up there at the door. I'll be giving the lead-off talk on Saturday morning, and I'll be talking about the financial Armageddon. Anyway, Richard, thank you so very much for being with us. I'll really look forward to meeting you personally this weekend.
Thank you, Stan. Me too. I can't wait to meet you.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Richard Gates. And please, he's a very, very courageous person to have done what he's done. And certainly, as with everybody in this movement, why he is deserving of the support of the public. So he will be speaking sometime either Saturday or Sunday. I'm not sure which day. Then, of course, this is the time when I need to remind you that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there and you agree with us that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, financial battlefield, We hope you'll get in touch with us. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our webpage at radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. There's a donate button there. And then, of course, we want to mention that we have a great deal of information on what happened. We have a series of articles. My newsletters gathered together in three pamphlets called Foreknowledge 911, and then another pamphlet called 911, What Really Happened. And each pamphlet is five newsletters. And there's no question at all that there was an organized effort to confuse NORAD and the FAA on that morning. And there were actually reports of some 15 different military exercises, five of them involved, planes being hijacked and crashed into buildings. And how could Condoleezza Rice, the NASA security advisor, saying, why, who could have ever thought that they would hijack our planes and crash them into buildings, when she'd already read the FBI report that said that they were planning on hijacking planes and crashing them into buildings? But that's not what brought the buildings down. And if you would like to get certainly Richard Gage's DVD, we do have it available. Simply Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and then by Richard Gage. We have five other DVDs on this, and in a special, we've got all sorts of information. If you go to our website and pull down the DVDs, there's no question of what happened. We have the terror timeline. It gives you the timeline of everything that happened. As you read it through, you realize, of course, that somebody had carefully planned the tragedy that occurred that day. And almost 3,000 Americans were murdered. But, of course, they were not murdered by the Muslims who were on the planes. And in fact, six of them are alive and well, living in the Near East. How could that possibly have happened? And how could it possibly be that the FBI, having no idea the attack was going to happen, by the following day, the very following day, they had the pictures of all of the Muslim terrorists who were on the 19 Muslim terrorists on the planes. How could they suddenly become so efficient? And ladies and gentlemen, nothing as it appears to be. Reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We have a great four-tape set. It's called Why Do the Buildings Come Down? Interviews with William Rodriguez and with the gentleman who is in charge of the Building 7, cleaning up the Building 7 after the attack. And he says 99% sure that it was a controlled demolition. We have this in the four-tape set on 9/11 update. 9/11 update. So much information, talking to the people who are actually there. Assembly of Jimmy Walters, a multimillionaire, who, of course, was trying to get the truth out. He was threatened and was forced to leave the country. He's living in hiding. Michael Rupert, who wrote about it, he's living in hiding in Canada. If there's nothing to conceal, who is it who's threatening all of these people? Please understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle, but we have to be involved as well. And please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio.